This week, after a barrage of think pieces, op-eds, stump speeches, and millions of dollars of advertisements, the fate of the Iran nuclear deal, which would lift economic sanctions in exchange for limiting Iran's nuclear capabilities, seemed finally to be settled.
In a major win for the Obama administration, the nuclear deal with Iran now appears unstoppable. The president has now locked down all the votes he needs for the controversial agreement to survive in the Republican-controlled Senate.
Breaking news on the Iran nuclear deal just moments ago. Democratic Maryland Senator Mikulski announced she will support it. She becomes the 34th senator to do so, ensuring that the deal will
survive. You'd be forgiven for thinking that this means a majority of Congress approves of the deal. Not by a long shot. Florida Senator and presidential hopeful Marco Rubio.
Well, first of all, they don't have the votes to pass it. He has the votes to sustain a veto. And irrespective of where this ends up, I'm confident that the majority of the House and Senate are going to vote to reject this deal.
Senator Rubio is correct. So, if deal opponents vote to reject the agreement later this month, as promised, President Obama will veto it. As promised. That 34th yes vote guarantees only that there will not be enough opposition for Congress to overturn the inevitable veto, thus lawmaking. However, even if the veto stands, opponents of the deal, like Senator Rubio, are adamant that the fight is far from over.
But here's a broader point. This is not a treaty. There's nothing about this that's binding on the next administration. And if I'm the president of the United States, in my first day in office, we will lift what the president is doing. We will reimpose sanctions, and in fact, I will...
Meaning that this debate is not going anywhere. Jeffrey Lewis is a nonproliferation scholar at the Monterey Institute of International Studies and founding publisher of the Arms Control Wonk blog. He's observed the pro- and anti-deal media messaging and has found both sides lacking. Jeffrey, welcome to the show.
Sure. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's start with where you are on the deal. You're for it.
Yes. I was expecting the deal to not be as strong as it was, right? I work in nonproliferation, so I'm mostly concerned with things like verification. But I found that the provisions, particularly for dealing with secret or hidden facilities, to be pretty persuasive. So yeah, I'm for it.
Having thus declared, can we begin with the reservations you have about the pro-deal advertising? For example,
the bottom line, this is a good deal. It means no nuclear weapon for Iran. It means inspections of Iran. It means a safer Israel.
The toughest inspection program in history, with inspectors on the ground and round-the-clock monitoring at all Iranian nuclear sites.
And it gives the international community unprecedented access to verify that Iran is keeping up its end of the bargain.
What's your gripe with that fairly straightforward argument?
There is this tendency to refer to this as the toughest agreement ever, or to say that the measures in the agreement are unprecedented. To me, that's always been odd because, you know, if something's unprecedented or the best, it doesn't necessarily mean it's good enough, right? So there are things about the agreement that are novel that I like, but there are also things about the agreement that are absolutely mundane and normal, but I like those too. So I do feel like if you're going to talk about the agreement, it's better to be specific about the good things it does and to characterize those correctly than it is to make these kind of much grander appeals.
It seems to me that the slogan for the administration is, it's better than nothing.
I don't particularly like the framing that they have picked for this agreement. I don't like calling it a deal. Deal sounds like you're haggling over a used car. I really wish that they would find a way to emphasize the benefits of it without either just sort of vaguely saying it's the, you know, toughest agreement ever, or without sort of saying like, well, what's your alternative?
Okay. Now, before we get to the advertising from the anti-deal side of the rhetoric, let's pull back a little bit and talk about the arguments that you believe are hyperventilating or actually worse.
Arguments that are against the deal, they tend to have a lot of details in them. I think the details are wrong. The one that makes me really crazy is the claim that the IAEA has to wait 24 days to inspect a site.
There's a 24-day period Iran has built into the agreement as it is, in which they can delay, delay, delay.
Can you imagine giving a drug dealer 24 days notice before you check the premises? That's a lot of time to flush a lot of meth down the toilet.
In writing this deal, something really clever was done, which is to put time limits. So as soon as the IAEA asks for access. There's a 14-day limit for how long the Iranians can drag things out by trying to negotiate access. And if the IAEA isn't satisfied in 14 days and there's a 7-day period to vote on it, then the Iranians basically have 3 days to comply. People are taking these and they're adding them all up and they're saying, oh, that's 24 days. And so then they walk around saying every inspection is going to take 24 days, which is just crazy because there's now a limit on how long they can delay, and that gets turned from a maximum into a minimum. It feels to me like a lot of these arguments are tactical, right? They're not strategic. It's not somebody who's really sitting down and saying, like, what do I want in an agreement? It's more like, oh, you got this good thing in an agreement. Well, if I twist it a little bit, I can make it sound like it's a really bad thing.
Well, let's hear what that sounds like.
Iran keeps their nuclear facilities. Military sites can go uninspected. Restrictions end after 10 years.
And over the next 10 to 15 years, all restrictions will end, allowing Iran to build a dangerous nuclear program.
That gives one pause.
If that was the agreement that the administration brought home, like, I would be against it. It's repeating all the same things, like they keep all their facilities. It's not true. You know, the claim that there's no inspections of military sites, that's just factually not true. The IAEA has the right to request access to any site. They say it ends after 10 years. You know, some things end after 10 years. Other things in the deal last for 15, 20, or 25. And some things like the Enhanced Safeguards Agreement, the additional protocol they agree to, lasts forever.
If all else fails, including lies big and small, there's always just striking terror.
2-1-0. We must not let the jihadist government of Iran get a nuclear bomb.
I don't like the Iranian government all that much. I'm glad I don't live there. They do a bunch of stuff I don't like. They're literally not jihadis.
Now, Jeffrey, that is a direct reference to the infamous LBJ ad in his race against Barry Goldwater. Imagine, if you will, a little girl plucking petals off of a daisy in synchrony with a countdown, like a countdown before a nuclear blast.
3, 2, 1, 0.
Suggesting that a vote for Goldwater was a vote for nuclear holocaust. Iran is not a jihadist state, but it is an exporter of terrorism, and it has at various times called for Israel to be wiped off the map. This ad suggests that we are acting as enablers in what is certain to be a nuclear future.
You know, the LBJ ad, which I actually teach in my class, is an argument about what nuclear weapons mean. And that argument is that we live in a world in which we can destroy civilization, right? And that means that even countries that we don't like, we still have to find a way to try to settle our differences and get along with because the stakes are too high. We may not like the Iranians. The reality is that they have the capability to build a nuclear weapon if they want. So our choices are to either go down a road of confrontation or try to find a diplomatic solution.
The overriding theme of much of the rhetoric in the ads and outside is not that we should never deal with the Iranians, but we should cut a better deal.
President Obama is negotiating a bad deal with Iran. Senator Marco Rubio is fighting to stop it.
I mean, it's the easiest thing in the world to say, right? If you just elect a president from my party, you'll get a better deal. The Bush administration came into office in January 2001. And there was an agreement in place with North Korea that the North Koreans were violating, right? And so the Bush administration had a choice, and they made exactly this choice. They said, we're going to blow up the deal the Clinton administration has, and we're going to go get a better deal. 8 years later, they left with no deal. And in that period of time, the North Koreans dramatically expanded the number of nuclear weapons that they had. So yeah, it's easy to say that you would get a better deal, but I'm not entirely convinced that Marco Rubio is going to ride in on a unicorn. And, you know, magically the Iranians are going to be like, oh, okay, we give.
If you had been in charge of the campaign against the nuclear agreement with Iran, what would have your attack ads had to say?
The argument that the Obama administration doesn't really have a strategy for dealing with the security problems in the Middle East. They have an agreement, but it's not embedded in any kind of regional security approach. I really would have hit them hard on not being able to explain how the Iran nuclear deal fits in with whatever their plan to deal with the enormous humanitarian crisis in Syria is, plus making sure that our allies feel confident in our approach.
If this were 15 years ago, you could have taken out the words Iran deal and replaced them with the war in Iraq and made exactly the same point.
That's exactly true. One of the fascinating things about American politics is we seem to care deeply about goings on in the Middle East, but we don't seem to think deeply about them. The way we kind of do things, you know, seems to be a lot of short-term thinking.
Bass backwards, as they say.
Yeah. Horse before the cart's the nice way to say it, but yeah, bass backwards.
Jeffrey, thanks so much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Jeffrey Lewis is director of the East Asian Nonproliferation Program at the James Martin Center for Nonproliferation Studies and the founding editor of the Arms Control Wonk blog.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.